Okay, here we go. The big picture. Ooh, we're doing the big picture of the church. I've been calling it the Church of Science, but recently I've been thinking about the Church of Evolution. Science is pretty broad, and the real conflict is with evolution, I think. When people have that trouble, that's where we run up against all those religious gods. I wanted to have a different god. I wanted to put humans in charge here in the what I've been calling the Church of Science, because we are just those mostly hairless apes. Welcome back to a podcast. Broadcasting today, or recording today, on August 22nd. And actually, Vice President Kamala Harris will be speaking tonight at the Democratic National Convention. And I've been trying to follow this election season, analyzing it from the perspective of evolution as a artificial selection going on here in America in 2024. And there's been a palpable emotional vibe, whatever that's worth. The idea of positive energy coming out. We still got the orange parasite going around spewing his stuff. And the Democrats have been in Chicago, have managed to avoid the ghosts of 1968, and they've resurrected a new spirit. And they've actually got, I think a good word would be gumption. They're actually challenging some of the fear-based hate and the weirdness. Weird is the buzzword of the day. Calling the Republicans weird. It has been interesting watching the Democratic convention and all the Republicans who've stepped up and said, I'm voting for Harris because the other guy's a loon. I've seen everything from madness to criminal used to describe the orange parasite. And he's just an interesting soul. He's just his own person, obviously. And I must have touched a chord because millions of Americans have voted for him. And I think it's that, the fear of what could be. And the Democrats have finally grasped an idea that it's okay to be different. And if you don't respect the fact that we're all different, then you're weird. And that's going to be an interesting thing to play out over the next 75 days, I believe, is what we have to the election. And the Democrats have this new message. And I've thought about it from the artificial selection standpoint. And what would happen with the social adaptations that I've been trying to frame out, if we look at those and we think about what's going to happen if a Democratic landslide, let's go and have some fun today. Let's assume there's a huge blue wave in November. And let's play that out. What would happen if a bunch of Democratic legislators got in and you get a new President Harris with a blue Senate and a blue House? We still got the court, obviously. Still got the Supremes, which we have to deal with at a later date. But if you got the Democrats in charge, and they actually talked about what would we do with democracy in charge, we might finally actually break the hold of the capitalist economy. Because if you've been listening, I've broken civilization down into three main social adaptations that we use. Humans are social animals. We're evolving social primates, just like a variety of other evolving social animals. Herds of wildebeest and colonies of ants, and being a group is a successful evolutionary strategy. And there's all sorts of animal behavior that gets studied under the aegis of natural selection. And there's obviously genetic contributions to it. We could talk about the genetic mechanisms present in ant and bee colonies, and kin selection that's been analyzed. But with artificial selection, assuming consciousness is a real thing, and that we have free will, I've gone down that rabbit hole before, and we're making decisions based on our information available at the mental level, and we can suppress our emotions, and we can handle hunger. And when everybody's in a pretty good mood, what if we could actually rationally think about stuff? Do my adaptations apply? Do the adaptations of government and economy and belief system become the major information sources? And if we actually move past the biases of old school religion. And we said a belief system could include science, and we could say, let's just deal with the evidence. Because then the choices reduce to, if we say we're not going to have a formal religion, we're actually going to respect the First Amendment and say there's no establishment of religion in this country, and we're not going to acknowledge anything, and we're not put any tests of religion on anybody. Say just all you have to do is think. And then what do we have to think about? Then the only thing we have to think about then are the rules, the government, and the economy. And it boils down to, do you want democracy versus autocracy? And that one seems to be shifting to the blue wave, where people are saying, get out of my business. Stop being weird. Who cares with who's sleeping with who? Who cares what color you are? Who cares which deity you pray to, you think is out there? None of that should matter. The only thing that should matter is your reasonable behavior as a citizen. Can you follow the rules? And the rules just need to be generated that allow us to make reasonable decisions about stuff. And that's what I think democracy is all about. What's the best thing we could choose to and tolerate? Because that's really what democracy requires, is tolerance. We just have to be able to put up with each other and accept that people are different, and they do different things, and they sleep with different people, and they reproduce at different rates, and that's all going to be choices. And maybe this is the first step to going down the road. Maybe a few generations down the road, we could have a reasonable planetary government that said democracy is the key thing. And we want, but in order to do that, we have to distribute resources, so we need an economy. And everybody likes capitalism. I agree. Capitalism is a really awesome adaptation. I mean, everybody should own a chunk of the planet. I think we should realize that we have to share. But at the same time, everybody needs their own space. Because if you have your own space and you're safe, then you can actually have the confidence to confront challenges. You can take on a load. You can take on burdens and know you have some support. And that brings us back to, how would we organize our society? And I think we have to acknowledge the idea of the natural world, the biological world. And this gives me the idea of, and I think I've mentioned it before, borrowing a term from Vonnegut, the grand falloon, the temporary structure, but it needs to be something different. It actually should be family. Because the one thing that we can't ignore in terms of natural selection is the fact that we have genetic variables. We all have differences. And when, if we look at humans as a biological species and we say, how should we organize ourselves? The family actually becomes important. You know, that's one thing that people relate to. Because at its core, in our social groups, most of us accept the fact that the place, the group we've gotten the most support from in life has been our family. There is that kin selection. There is that genetic imperative that says, hey, we should take care of our own. And if you elevated that to a conscious awareness, if you move beyond the genetic impulses that say I should support individuals who are more like me, who I know I'm related to, I can identify with that on some level, then we could say, well, now we can actually set up a market competitive area and say, well, whose alleles, whose variations are the best? We're all, you know, just a clarification in case for the non-biologists in the crowd to appreciate the distinction between genes and alleles. So appreciate that genes were identified for thousands of years. We've all realized, people realized kids look like their parents. And we've had all sorts of laws against for fidelity in marriage because we realized kids look like their parents. And when there were infidelities, sometimes you got some interesting new crosses. The red-headed stepchild, as it were. But if we all accepted the fact that we all have these genetic differences, and we all share the same genes, but the differences are in the alleles. And biologists themselves have made a dreadful mistake in the vocabulary when we talk about the gene pool. Because the gene pool, the genome, is a more accurate term. The genome is what's been identified recently, and we've had a genome project. And the genome is the specific set of genetic information for each species. So all humans use the same genes. So we have a gene for liver function, genes for liver function and brain development and blood type, you know, but there are different variations. You can be type A blood or type B blood or AB or O. Those are the alleles. Those are the different alleles, the variations on the theme, because that's what evolution does. It experiments. That's the core feature that we want to embrace with artificial selection, is we want to have stability balanced with experimentation. That's really what natural selection does. You get a species established, a new group of organisms who share a set of genetic information, a genome. But then over time, variations evolve, alleles, variations in the genetic information and options. And then you run up against the natural world and you get natural selection. You get survival of the fittest. You get reproduction at different rates. And whatever works, if you can keep more of your species alive, you win the game of life. And so as a biological species, once we realize this, in this new church of evolution, I'm evolving myself here, converting the church of science into the church of evolution. And once we all embrace this scientific worldview, and we say evolution's a real thing, and we know how natural selection works to a certain extent, and we extend that into artificial selection, and we say, instead of genetic information, now we have mental information. And that mental information falls into at least three categories. What are the rules that we govern our behavior by, our social systems? And we've had all sorts of different civilizations based on those rules. What's our economy? How do we distribute resources? And capitalism seems to have won the day there. And then we have our ignorance. We accept that we don't know. That's one of the most beautiful things about the Church of Evolution. As opposed to the blind faith you get with all the deities and all the expectations for religion, in the Church of Evolution, you say, we have incomplete knowledge. We don't have full mental information. We don't know how everything works. We don't know whether it's string theory or quarks and leptons or whatever it is the physicists have hit for probabilities at the smallest scale of matter. You know, we've got the theory of the Big Bang. You know, we've got these ideas about the ultimate causes, but we're not there yet. But we have a pretty good understanding of proximate causes. The medical science has advanced quite a bit in the last few centuries. And it's taken off with our technology and what we can analyze and how we can fix things. And we send that into the marketplace. And we have cancer clinics and therapeutic applications and dentistry and all these fun things. And we should have that as part of the economy. But here's what democracy would say, I think. If we were to have a democratic government that really embraced democracy and put democracy in charge of the economy, we would say, what's the best way to share things? And I think you have to concede that a logical alternative is to say everybody should have a home. Everybody should have needs taken care of. That's where capitalism fails us. Because capitalism says, I can own as much as I can get my hands on, as much as I can hold. In its crudest sense, laissez-faire capitalism is really not much more than an extension from biology. In a biologically determined world, in a natural selection world, if I can take territory and hold it, and I can fight you off, then I win, and I can hold that territory. And if I have to kill you in the process, I'm going to do that. And humans have been doing that for thousands of years, because we were originally just hunter-gatherers wandering around. But somewhere around 5,000 years ago, we invented money, we started settling down. You know, 10,000 years ago, we started doing settlements. We've had Göbekli Tepe and Stonehenge, and we've built these places that were centralized, for lack of a better term, urban centers. And then we started making civilizations beyond just our small tribal groups. And we had to have rules. And for the most part, we had autocrats, we had kings, because monarchies were an extension of biology. That made the most sense. We knew that we had to still take care of those limits. Everybody had to eat. Everybody had to have fresh water. Everybody had to have shelter. And we had to protect ourselves from predators, and both human and other, and animal. You know, and we figured out pathogens, and we figured out healthcare, and we built these bigger civilizations, and the Europeans did it best, for the most part. And they took over the planet with a combination of adaptations that included both, that were primarily were artificial, all the technology that burst out of the scientific revolution that gave navigational and weaponry skills to the Europeans for the last 500 years have fueled the colonial era of human history. And we've had this situation where we've built up this global species and this global civilization, and we've threw out the colonial empires. We said, we don't want monarchies anymore. That was the 20th century. And now we're in the 21st century, and we have to figure out, how do we make democracy and capitalism work? And we have to make a distinction with the economy then. If democracy is in charge, if people are most important, then we have to say, well, prove it. Because evolution's all about experiments. And so what would be the world government that would set up that would improve things? Well, one thing would be the basics of saying which genetics are more important. One of the things we've had over the last 100 years, well, for thousands of years, is different groups of people looking at each other and going, you're different, and I don't approve of that. And subsequently killing people or putting them into slavery because of different colors or different hairstyles or different facial features, whatever it was that you could pick out of the crowd and say, those guys are different. We use that as a tool to have biases, to generate the animosity we need, the emotional input to go to war and kill people. And now if we're going to step back and say, well, all right, now that we understand biology better and we understand we're all the same species and that these are just variations, we should set up the experiment and our just global society as saying, let's let different genetic groups prove themselves, not purely through violence, not purely through killing each other, but through achievement, through success. And so what we should say is we construct a society where the legal foundation are families. And so people get to link themselves up in familial groups, and they're the ones who make the life and death choices. They're the ones that decide on euthanasia and abortion and growth rates, and they have to support themselves in the economy. And if that experiment was ongoing, we would have to say, well, where can they compete? We can compete economically in the marketplace. What should the marketplace be? Well, here's the trick. If we want to move past war, we want to move past need, we need to set up a government that supplies the basics. That's the only thing. We shouldn't be setting up a government to worry about legislating who dies and who lives. Other than the fact that we should say we want everybody to live, or as many people as possible, because that gives us a better chance as a species. We don't know which genetic variables are best. We want to run the genetic experiment and say, is it better to have more options or not? And if the hypothesis is it's better to have more genetic options, which is what natural selection has told us, that's what the data from evolution and with natural selection tells us, is that when you get too few options, you get inbreeding, you get FLKs, you get funny-looking kids, you get these mutations that accumulate, and to have genetic variation ends up being contributing to more survival and reproduction, to more fitness for a given species. So how do we encourage the most genetic diversity? We give the legal status to genetic lineages. And that means, yes, we got people from Africa, we got people from Asia, we got people from the Americas. And we say, all right, you guys are your own family groups. And we have different families within each of those. There's all those races of people. But obviously we have interracial people too as well. People have crossed those boundaries and done that bold step of crossing over from one genetic lineage into another. And that's a beautiful thing, that outbreeding, hybrid vigor that we get from crossing lines. And so when you say the family unit is the fundamental government unit, and we accept that the families can vote on things, then we can create grand falloons or whatever we want to call them, tribal units, But these would be the legal units, and they're the ones who are charged with life and death decisions, not the society at large, because ultimately life and death means you're keeping your genetic variables in the game, or you're not. If you want to make more babies, make more babies. You got to support them, though. And how do you support them? Well, that's where we make the distinction. We're going to say, at this point in human history, here's part of the government experiment, we will support a minimum amount of people. We'll support a replacement rate of reproduction. So the replacement rate of reproduction right now is probably less than one child per couple. Because one of the challenges we have is multi-generational families. If the family is the fundamental legal unit, then the family has multiple generations. And people are still around. Old folks, you might have grandparents, great-grandparents, grandchildren. You could experience seven generations in your life. If you think about it, you're influenced by your grandparents, and great-grandparents might be around when you're born. And you might last long enough to have great-grandchildren, if you're lucky. And with that, you'd have all those people that would need to be supported. And whoever's doing it are the people who are still working, who can make money, who can own a part of the world and generate some protective shelter and resources for the group. And that's how life has worked for years. But some people have cornered the market and sequestered more resources. So we have to separate it out. We have to make sure everybody can sustain themselves while having a competitive economy to determine what's better. And so the capitalist economy needs to be limited to the optional games. Everybody should be able to get basic education and healthcare, and that should be a pretty much a managed economy. That at least with the government saying we're going to put limits on it, we're going to set standards of prices, we're going to set standards of salary. And if you're supplying that, then you're part of the big government corporation that runs the world. And what we say is, if you're a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher, you get a set pay, you get a retirement, you get health care, and that corporate idea is how we run these things. And those are the necessary things that we're going to regulate by government. Everything else is open for fun. All the rest of the market would be the free market. But we're going to start by distributing and making sure everybody